House File 92 will come to order. A quorum is present. Senator Eaton, my intention was to just ask Ms. Newman to run us through the differences between the bills, and you were not at White Castle at 2 o'clock.
I heard I was at a fancy restaurant, so I decided.
You want to toss me a slider?
I was going to come like you all have. I've been eating. Give me some mints to go along. I was doing some minimum wage surveying, and people that worked at White Castle said they would love to have a wage increase.
Do I hear a motion for the House position? So, is that okay with you? Senator Eaton?
Yes.
Is it planned? Ms. Newman, could you just run through the differences?
I'm in the same place.
Mr. Chair and members, there is a side-by-side of the bill. On page R1, House Section 1 makes a couple of different kinds of changes. It adopts the federal business activities level threshold of $500,000 a year to be the dividing line between large employers and small employers. And then beginning on line 1.24 on the House side, it increases the minimum wage for all categories of employers in three steps beginning August 1st, 2013. And then beginning January 1st, 2016, indexes the wage to the rate of inflation. Do you want me to go through all the wage rates?
I think that would be helpful.
Okay. Mr. Chair and members, for large employers, the minimum wage would go to $8 an hour on August 1st of this year. It would go to $9 an hour on August 1st of 2014. And it would go to $9.50 an hour on August 1st, 2015. For small employers, and again, these would be under $500,000 a year in business activity, it would go to $7 on August 1st of this year, $8 on August 1st of 2014, and $8.50 an hour beginning August 1st, 2015. For the training wage, that would be increased to $6.50 an hour beginning August 1st of this year, $7.50 an hour beginning August 1st of 2014, and $8 an hour beginning August 1st of 2015. And again, all these wages would be indexed to inflation beginning January 1st of 2016. On page R2, beginning on lines 2.21 to 2.28, is the indexing provision in the House. And the indexing, the inflation, is limited to the lesser of 2.5% a year or the actual calculated rate of inflation. On page R2 of the House language, on line 2.29, it requires that minimum wage standards and the inflationary increase have to be reflected in any state reimbursement for social service programs and services under this bill. Mr. Fuller, do you want to explain the Senate?
Mr. Fuller.
Mr. Chair, going back to R1, the Senate does not raise the rate for small employers. It raises the rate for large employers in three increments, 725, the same dates as the House, different numbers. 750 on August 1st, 2013, and 775 on August 1st, 2015. 725 on 13. We do not have a change in the definition of large and small employers. And then the training raise on R2, 2.1 is bumped from 490 to 515. Down at the bottom of the page are two new provisions, two new exceptions. On 2.4 to 2.6, that essentially says that for under an 18-year-old, they get the first bump, but no subsequent bump, so it's a 7.25. And the second one on 2.7 was put in as a floor amendment, and it provides that the federal rate shall be paid to employees of large employers who are licensed long-term care providers, and if they're allowed to sleep for all or part of their job.
Mr. Chair, that there are some additional House provisions that are not contained in the Senate bill. Section 2, beginning on the bottom of page R2 and going on to page R3, is a floor amendment that says that if gratuities are paid via a bank card, a credit card, or a debit card, the full amount of that gratuity has to be paid to the employee. And then later in the bill, the rule language that currently addresses this is repealed. Section 3 on page R3 changes the overtime standard to the federal threshold of 40 hours a week instead of the current law, 48 hours a week. Section 4 of the House bill was a floor amendment that expands the overtime, the current law overtime exemption to salespeople and mechanics employed by motor vehicle dealers by striking the language that limited that exemption to those getting commissions or incentive fees. Section 5 of the House bill, beginning on the bottom of R3 and going to R4, makes the 40-hour overtime threshold change for air carrier employees. Section 6 on page R4, this was also a floor amendment. It provides that for agricultural employment, the 48-hour overtime threshold standard would be maintained, and it references the definition of agriculture that's currently in the Department of Labor and Industry rule to define that. And lines 4.13 to 4.16 requires the Commissioner of Labor and Industry to do a study and make a report on the number of ag workers who are using the 48-hour work week and the number of people affected. Section 7 in the House bill goes to the for the parental leave provision in current state law goes to the 12-week level that is in federal law, and Section 8 makes an aligning change in the statute that addresses how all the leave provisions work together. Section 9 is the repealer that I spoke about that deals with the gratuities paid by bank, debit, or credit card.
Thank you, Ms. Newman. Any comments, Senator Eaton? Or
the majority of this was in my amendment that didn't make it on the floor, as far as the policy stuff goes.
Okay.
But there was nothing new that I heard.
Okay, yeah. We could adopt same or similar, but I don't think there is any, except maybe the House file number. So I think we are in a position of having different bills, which we've known for some time. And I'm not aware of anybody offering any amendments at this time. Seeing none of those, depending on what happens in the next 9 hours of this legislative session, we may be in a position to move very quickly on a conference report if it is prepared. And so at this time, I would invite anybody who feels compelled to testify on this issue, knowing that we've had extensive hearings in the House and I imagine significant hearings in the Senate. So perhaps limit your testimony to anything new that hasn't been covered already or that you are so compelled to share that you're certain that everybody's time would be spent well in listening. Anybody want to testify? Mr. Rockler, can you make it? Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Chairman Winkler, members of the committee, my name is Ken Rockler. I'm here representing the Tavern League of Minnesota and the bowling proprietors. The only issue that I have in terms of what was covered and wasn't covered was the House amendment at the last moment about striking the ability for the restaurant to be able to take the discount rate that they pay on the charged gratuity there was never a hearing on that. Caught us totally by surprise, number one. Number two, I think it's an example of what is going to harm the very people you're trying to protect again. Right now, already, if you go to fast casual places, they do not allow a tip on the credit card. If you go to Caribou, if you go to Panera Bread, you've heard some of the issues on the other things with those places before. I've talked to some of our members right now. They will go to not allowing a charge tip. They won't get rid of the credit card charges, but some of them are going to be going to not taking a charge tip. And I guess I would ask, if a tip is defined by everyone as solely the property of the tipped employee, which we've never argued about that, and it's for all other purposes, why, when there is a discount charged by the bank to the proprietor for that tip that comes straight out of what they get from the credit card company at that time, why wouldn't the person that's receiving the gratuity cover the discounted portion? That's a federal law. It's been around since 1976. It was reinforced in Illinois in 2005. So it's a fairly common practice these days, and I think you're going to find that it'll work the other way in terms of what will happen in terms of servers.
Thank you, Mr. Rockler. And just for the record, the course House amendments were posted 24 hours in advance, and there was a pretty strong bipartisan vote in support of that amendment. But your comments are understood. Anything further from any? Oh. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, members of the Conference Committee, I'm Bruce Nelson from ARM. We're an association of disability providers across the state of Minnesota, particularly in the various waivers and ICFDD. I thank you for the opportunity to speak, but I wanted to bring you some additional information in regards to what happened in the Health and Human Services Committee that may have a bearing on your decision. I'm speaking to the provision that for long-term care providers who employ people who, professionals who work during the day and sometimes in the evening or through the night, full-time providing services to people. Then there's another group of people who are, when you're required to have someone sleep overnight, that are typically college students and folks who aren't really supporting their families on that. It's a transitional thing typically, and they are paid often at the minimum wage. What transpired in the Health and Human Services Committee is now for the fifth straight year, those folks providing care to people with disabilities in group homes will not get an increase. They get 1% in April of 2014. And the reason that's important is that 97% of the money that our folks get come from government. Almost everything goes to compensation, wages, around 80%. And so if a higher minimum wage for the sleep time people is adopted, that's going to mean fewer hours or less compensation and benefits and maybe even wages for those people who now haven't seen an increase going on now for the fifth year. Or people may be laid off because you can't keep squeezing the wages that we now aren't able to pay for the professional people working during the day. So I would implore you to adopt the Senate provision so that we have the resources, as meager as they are, without an increase in the Health and Human Services bill, to pay the best we can to those full-time, daytime caregivers across the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Any questions or comments from senators on this provision on the floor? Seeing none. Senator Tomasoni.
I heard that the sleep workers only get paid for half the time that they're there. Is that correct, or is that?
Mr. Chairman, Nelson. Senator Tomasoni, and Mr. Fuller may be able to embellish on this. I know he's done considerable research. It's my understanding that that applies to companion programs where people are living full-time in a residence. We're talking about shift staff who come in and sleep during the night. So that is not what this applies to.
Very well, thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Alex Fitzsimmons, and I'm with Children's Defense Fund Minnesota. And I just want to leave you with three figures, and they're new. But one, the Economic Policy Institute did an analysis for Minnesota on what the $9.50 minimum wage would mean for children and families. And they found that 137,000 Minnesota children would be impacted by a $9.50 minimum wage increase. That when they looked at the workers and the percentage of workers that are parents, they found that about 20% of minimum wage workers who would be covered by the $9.50 minimum wage increase are parents. And then thirdly, just want to remind you, too, that 70% of minimum wage earners in Minnesota are women. So really encourage you to be looking at this from the perspective of children and families and what it can do for child well-being in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Fitzsimmons. Any questions? Seeing no further testimony, and I don't think having any further business at this time, we are going to be in recess.